"He is," he said. But the task force focused its recommendations on helping small operators who produce 1,000 barrels or less and have shallower pockets and less economies of scale than their larger peers, Staples said. Longenecker agreed. He said that while the task force tried to take a broad view, the goal was to provide small producers with regulatory relief. Quote, "This crisis does not discriminate," he said. Still, quote, "things that can be done for the industry should be done regardless of size," Staples said. From an immediate standpoint, Longenecker said recommendations focused on regulatory relief not just from the Railroad Commission, but other agencies like the General Land Office and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, on extending deadlines and on fees. Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock has asked Comptroller Glenn Hagar to consider providing relief on severance taxes. At the public meeting where the three railroad commissioners voted 2-1 to not implement production cuts or pro-rationing, Christian asked the task force to come up with recommendations to address flaring and submit them by the June 16th public meeting. Both Staples and Longenecker pointed out that their associations, along with a number of producers, are part of the newly formed Texas Methane and Flaring Coalition. Quote, "We've already started conversations ahead of the meeting on June 16th, Staples said. "We will be having more robust conversations and be crafting recommendations. I know emissions are declining for the wrong reasons, because of a lack of drilling activity. We want to demonstrate our commitment to high environmental standards in good times and in bad," end quote. He predicted a focus will be on best practices. Quote, "Best practices are very important. When they're developed, they've been proactive in raising the bar, and everyone is challenged to meet that bar," he said. Longenecker called flaring a fine topic to focus the task force efforts on, saying the industry has made tremendous investments in technology to mitigate flaring, and the new coalition is looking at fostering collaborations to develop best practices. Staples believes the Texas oil and gas industry will be a player on the global oil scene, and the Permian Basin will be on the front lines. He has three reasons for that optimism: infrastructure, innovation, and technology. Quote, "We have the geology, we have the ports and refineries, the midstream capability to move product. When obstacles come up, this industry uses innovation to find solutions. And because the Railroad Commission maintained certainty when it declined to implement pro-rationing, technology will advance and be showcased moving forward," Staples said. Morningstar sees inevitable recovery in oil demand. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Dark clouds are looming over the energy industry, but the equity research team at Morningstar is forecasting an inevitable recovery and strong catch-up in oil demand. Preston Caldwell and Dave Meets recently released a report detailing how they see the industry recovering from historic demand destruction and plunging oil prices. Quote, "We expect a relatively V-shaped recovery for oil demand, in line with our views for economic growth," the two wrote in their report. Continuing the quote, "We expect some lingering impact in 2021 as a vaccine probably won't be available until midway through the year, but nevertheless the bulk of the lost demand should be recovered by 2021. That's in line with the rapid demand recovery we project for the second half of 2020. End quote. Producers, Caldwell told the Reporter-Telegram in an email, quote, are making the right call by aggressively cutting rigs. This is an aggressive response to maximize balance sheet health. Likewise, it maximizes the net present value of their assets. Why would you deplete your reserves and sell at low oil prices if you expect prices to rebound? End quote. He went on to note it's logical for producers and service companies to respond to lower near-term prices by slashing activity. Quote, this isn't an overreaction, as it doesn't diminish these companies' ability to respond to the eventual recovery in oil prices. By contrast, investors are very much overreacting in our view, given the sell-off in energy stocks, which should reflect the long-term recovery in oil prices more than the market's myopic focus on near-term distress for oil markets, Caldwell said in his email. Morningstar analysts forecast a historic decline in oil demand for 2020, issuing a new decline forecast of almost 9 million barrels a day for the year. The impact of COVID-19 and global gross domestic product will be modest in the long run, analysts say, of about 0.9% long term. Once a COVID-19 vaccine is developed, Caldwell and Meets write in the report, quote, we see little reason for demand or most oil-related items, even air travel, not to fully return to normal. If the intensity of consumption is not severely affected, we will eventually see strong catch-up demand, which cannot be satisfied with a contribution from U.S. shale, and that business model simply does not work at strip prices. The marginal cost for shale producers is $55 per barrel for West Texas Intermediate, and without a recovery to that level, shale investment will fall far short of what's necessary. End quote. The two predict that oil markets should considerably tighten after 2021, thanks to the robust demand recovery coupled with slowing supply from U.S. shale and other areas. Upstream companies are aggressively cutting capital spending this year, which will eventually damp their output, they write in their report. Unless producers are willing to start investing in growth again, quote, we think the current glut could transition fairly quickly into a shortage, but the required increase in activity won't happen without higher oil prices. The U.S. shale industry is still the marginal producer in our global framework, and that business model doesn't work if prices dip sustainably below our $55 per barrel mid-cycle forecast. End quote. The men said that after 2020, they, quote, expect the U.S. to contribute more in rebalancing global oil supply with demand, which should placate both OPEC and Russia. End quote. Caldwell told the reporter Telegram in the email that he doesn't have strong concerns that the downturn has permanently impacted shale producers' ability to once again step up production to meet demand. Quote, I was correctly skeptical about similar concerns coming out of the 2016 downturn. In 2017, shale activity rebounded strongly, and moreover, efficiency continued to trend up despite the extreme volatility and activity, he said. One possible factor that could reduce oil demand is that the crisis could create a permanent boost to working from home, Caldwell and Meets said in their report. They cited a recent Gartner survey that found 74% of chief financial officers responding to the survey thought at least 5% of workers would transition from company offices to full-time work-at-home employees. The analysts have a bullish view of electric vehicle adoption, which could be a factor in reducing oil demand and harm the oil sector, quote, but not in the next 10 years, end quote. Permian Highway Pipeline continues to progress toward Gulf Coast. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Amid the chaos and confusion of COVID-19 pandemic, work continues on Kinder Morgan's Permian Highway Pipeline that will carry natural gas from the Waha Hub in the Permian Basin's Pecos County to the Katy area along the Gulf Coast. Quote, "One of the things you don't hear about in this crisis is energy, and that's a good thing," said Alan Foer, Vice President, Public Affairs with Kinder Morgan. "It means that the supply chain is working and energy is being delivered not only to residents and businesses, but to first responders on the front lines of battling the pandemic," he said in a phone interview. Quote, "I've been thinking about that a lot," he said. "When we've had crises in other times, energy may be part of the issue in terms of supplies, but not this time, because of infrastructure planning and being prepared," end quote. Kinder Morgan, which is building the $2 billion project in partnership with Midland's Eagle Claw Midstream and Elsa's Midstream, began construction on the western end of the pipeline. Foer said that spread, which extends 100 miles, is about 95% complete mechanically. Quote, "The pipe is in the ground, backfilling is complete. All that remains is some of the hydro testing of the pipe to complete. The tie-ins, restoration, and cleanup is about half done," end quote. The next two spreads, about 15 miles, will take the project into the hill country, which Foer said requires specialized construction methods because of the area's unique geology. Quote, "The visible signs of construction, about half the pipe has been strung on the right-of-way. We're half done with trenching, clearing, and grading is at about 80%. Those visible barometers of construction are well on the way," Foer said. The company anticipated the spreads crossing hill country would take longer because of the specialized construction required. Quote, "We understand there are unique areas of the hill country," he said. "The fact is, there is uniqueness to Hayes, Gillespie, Blanco, and Caldwell counties, so we tailored construction for those spreads," end quote. The route through the hill country has drawn opposition and lawsuits from residents. Most recently, the Sierra Club filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for permitting the pipeline, even though, the lawsuit said, a federal court order had vacated the nationwide permit on which the pipeline's 449 water crossings are based, and for not performing the environmental review required under the National Environmental Policy Act. Quote, "If completed, the Permian Highway Pipeline could devastate communities, clean water, and wildlife along the route, and the Army Corps can't just ignore these impacts," said Sierra Club Senior Campaign Representative Roddy Hughes in a statement announcing the lawsuit. Quote, "The fact that there's already been a spill in the local water supply in the early stages of construction makes it more obvious than ever that the Corps must not allow the continuing construction of this dirty, fracked gas pipeline without analysis of its environmental impacts and full local public participation in the permitting process," end quote. Foer responded that the company is reviewing the litigation, quote, "and other legal efforts that are ongoing," end quote. Whether or not those efforts end up in court, he said, quote, "We continue to work on the project based on what we've said at the outset. This is an important project. It's critical infrastructure. It's economically justified," end quote. The company follows the laws and regulations put in place by the counties, by the Railroad Commission, the Corps of Engineers, he said. Quote, "That hasn't changed. Litigation will follow its course. Meanwhile, we'll do what we do, confident that we're following the rules and regulations," end quote. The pipeline is still on target to be placed in service in early 2021, Ford said. Despite the faltering economy, he said the project remains commercial largely because, unlike crude oil and refined products, there remains demand for natural gas for power generation. Beyond that, he sees the project helping lift the economy. Quote, "We've seen folks struggling with unemployment. The state is putting out resources to help," Forrest said, continuing the quote. "With the thousands of jobs we're providing, if we shutter this construction project now, more people will be out of work. People want us to have a healthy industry. The revenues these projects bring in, the sales taxes we pay that help communities, including by using hotels, our folks are supporting local economies and the royalties and fees we pay. The billions the industry is investing provides state revenues. This $2 billion project will relate to billions and billions in additional revenues."
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 10th, 2020. Virus Ripples Higher Ed by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. The world economy has been slowing at least since the 2007-09 financial crisis. The virus shut down and has reduced unemployment to 1930 levels. Let's take a quick look. In the USA, some 33 million have filed for unemployment, but that does not count those who are out of work and not filing. The number is likely higher. State unemployment funds are already running low. The effect of this dislocation in 2 months has yet to be felt. It will be difficult to jumpstart the economy with that many sidelined out of it. In Europe, the PIGS, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain never really got recovered from their 2009 problems. Summer tourism in the Mediterranean looks bleak, making it a tough slog for a recovery. The Tigers of the Far East assumed manufacturing expansion from the West would continue. The U.S. stock market has bounced as it did from 1929 to 30. This time it was led by five stocks comprising 38% of the NASD. But volume among those five is decreasing, signaling a probable short-term top this next week. The ripple effect rolls across multiple industries. With no airline travel, Las Vegas still struggles to reopen. How many diners want to go to restaurants wearing masks? Oversupply and lack of demand is also hindering any energy recovery. Crude oil is trading about $24, but at that level, the industry simply cannot make money. Like the stock market, that number looks toppy already. Multiple industries, cruise, airline, hotels, have bet big on their futures. Now with small demand, that future is uncertain, which brings us to higher education. Higher education has been an unsustainable model for years. Free money in the form of loans and Pell Grants have insulated higher education from any responsibility for the outcome of $1.5 trillion in student debt. As one law student recently put it, the virus has ripped asunder the facade of higher education. I suspect the social mood on top of the higher education mania occurred with the now famous six-figure bribes. College Gate. Well-to-do parents bribed officials to admit their darlings to universities for which they were otherwise unqualified. They should have waited a year. The parents could have avoided the cost and the jail sentences. Now students are considering a gap year, dropping out rather than pay for online education. Betting big snared large universities with 80,000 empty seats in stadiums this fall. Suddenly, the demand for higher ed is not inelastic, but very elastic. Schools are extending deadlines for deposits. Some 38% of business students are considering delaying their MBA programs. And really, do those professors know any more than the businesses that would hire those graduates? The libraries are full of business books which could be read while working. This is a hard storm coming. Higher ed will likely be reshaped along with other industries. The Economist. Acts of Courage and Kindness Inspire by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. Bad news abounds these days, yet we've also seen some amazing acts of courage, kindness, and generosity. Firms are dealing with worker safety, social distancing requirements, supply chain issues, and myriad other challenges. Some industries are facing enormous pressure from increased demand, such as grocery stores, delivery services, pharmacies, and of course, healthcare. Others are struggling to survive closures, travel bans, and dramatic revenue declines. In the midst of the sudden and unprecedented chaos, many have stepped up, doing what they can to help their employees, customers, suppliers, and the world at large. I couldn't begin to recognize all of them, but here are a few Texas examples of the kinds of things going on. The heroic actions of the healthcare system have been genuinely remarkable. We are all profoundly grateful to healthcare providers and everyone else needed to keep those facilities running under most trying conditions. Cities are stepping in with packages to provide assistance, ranging from loans to small businesses to relief for those facing eviction or utility bills they cannot pay. City services are still being provided, even as the virus spreads and revenue challenges worsen. Law enforcement and firefighters continue to protect us, now risking their lives in yet another way. Dedicated educators are creatively reaching out to help today's students and tomorrow's workforce. Many companies have donated millions of dollars to relief efforts. This assistance has been critical to supporting both response to the pandemic and Texans hit hard by the fallout. Large grocery chains have delivered truckloads of products to food banks across Texas. Others are providing thousands of meals per week to frontline workers. Craft stores have donated fabric for masks. Restaurants are donating food. Logistics firms and airlines are helping things get to where they are needed. Manufacturing facilities have shifted from normal duties to making face shields and protective equipment. Distillers and chemical companies have produced hand sanitizer. Facilities that once made workwear or luxury purses are now sewing masks. University teams have tackled pressing problems ranging from designs for low-cost ventilator prototypes to 3D printed mask designs. Researchers in labs across the state are helping in efforts to better understand COVID-19 and find treatments and vaccinations. Businesses have also worked to support other companies, such as financial services firms ordering meals from local restaurants and having them delivered to frontline workers. Some are reimbursing employees for purchases from local restaurants, helping both their workers and the eateries. Economic development organizations are also supporting local firms around the state. Niche products have seen greatly enhanced demand if they meet a COVID-19 need, and companies are stepping up production accordingly. These responses and the countless others both help to maintain our economy now and facilitate a strong recovery later. Additionally, they are truly an inspiration. Be safe. Charitable Giving Tips by Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau of the Permian Basin. In the time of COVID-19, charities and organizations are creating relief funds to assist those who have been affected by the crisis. Giving Tuesday, the organization behind Giving Tuesday at the beginning of the holiday shopping season, established hashtag Giving Tuesday Now. The event, officially observed May 5th, encourages charitable giving to COVID-19 relief efforts. Giving Tuesday suggests supporting your community by purchasing gift cards from local small businesses, donating supplies to healthcare workers, and more. No matter when or why you decide to donate, it is important to stay diligent. Scammers are never above profiting off hardship. BBB's Wise Giving Alliance, WGA, offers tips to help you ensure your contributions are going to trustworthy charities. Keep these tips from your Better Business Bureau in mind when you donate. Choose your charity wisely. Consider certain factors when picking an organization to donate to. For example, more experienced relief organizations may have the resources and existing connections needed to deliver aid. Verify trustworthiness. The best way to avoid charity scams is to donate to a known and trustworthy organization. You can visit give.org to view charities accredited by BBB's Wise Giving Alliance. Accredited charities meet WGA's 20 standards of trust. Cut out the middleman. Some charities may be collecting money to pass along to a larger organization. Consider donating to that organization directly or choose a charity with a local presence. Confirm the charity's intentions. Look on the charity's website, social media, or other materials to see exactly how it intends to use the funds. Avoid donating if the organization offers vague language without offering specific details as to how donations will be used. Understand crowdfunding. It can be difficult to vet individuals using crowdfunding sites to collect donations. Only donate to crowdfunds created by someone you personally know, or avoid crowdfunding sites altogether. BBB Serving the Heart of Texas is proud to serve small businesses, essential workers, and communities in 105 counties across Texas. We strive to offer guidance to those giving back in a time of need. To learn more about avoiding charity scams, visit bbb.org. Go to now.givingtuesday.org to learn more about Giving Tuesday's COVID-19 relief efforts.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 74 and partly cloudy. Tonight, thunderstorms with a low in the low 60s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 10th, 2020. Life and Times. Great-grandmother celebrates 90th birthday amid pandemic. By Tony Venegas, T-V-E-N-E-G-A-S at OAOA.com. Betty Green has seen a lot over the course of her lifetime. She's moved all over the country, starting with being born in 1930 in Gadsden, Alabama, then to Florida, and eventually to Fort Worth and to Odessa, where she has called home since 1987. Green celebrated her 90th birthday Thursday, although it wasn't quite what she had envisioned at around this time last year. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to affect all walks of life in the Permian Basin and around the world, and Green is still adjusting to the new reality everyone is facing. "It's been a very boring life to sit at home all the time," she said. "I have hobbies and I stay busy most of the time, but I certainly miss seeing my friends and family." Part of what has made this pandemic challenging for Green is not having her husband. Baird Green, Betty's husband of 69 years, passed away last June, and dealing with that loss has been difficult as a new widow. "I think that's probably been the biggest thing," said Susie Jones, Green's daughter. "He didn't have to live through this. Being a widow and seeing Mom go through the loneliness of COVID by herself as a new widow has been a challenge." Jones also lives in Odessa, and both women are leaning on each other to get through these challenging times. Green also has her grandchildren and great-grandchildren living in Odessa as well, which was the main reason why she and her husband moved from Fort Worth. She's still able to see them, but in a different way. "They have ridden their bikes over, and they'll stay on the other side of the street, and we'll talk and greet each other," Green said. "It's been a long, long time since they've been in or anything like that." She also misses spending time with her family and her friends that she attends church with at First Presbyterian in Odessa. Despite those challenges, Green says she just tries to make the best of the